This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the BizNews briefing every weekday evening, excepting Fridays, from 6 o'clock to 6:30. We bring you the latest update on what's going on in the world that impacts your pockets. And if you happen to live in Johannesburg or Shwani or Pretoria, don't go anywhere. There's quite a big story coming up for you today. Also, if you've ever run in the Comrades Marathon or want to, that's covered well. There's a big change on that side. We'll be looking back at whether American shares are overvalued and Elon Musk's wealth. Let's kick off with the markets, and most unusual to see one of the indices on the JSE having no change, but that's exactly what went on with the top 40 index today. That's because financials were down and resources were up either side of 1%, resources about 1.5%, financials down by almost 1%, and then industrials were about 0.5% stronger. So a good day to be in resources at last. They've really been taking a lot of pain recently. Bitcoin, a little firmer again today, $95,935, up 0.25%. But the Rand, very, very smartly lower, 18.15, down 1 cent against the dollar and down 2 cents against the pound, 22.96. Biggest moving shares on the JSE today, Anglo Gold Ashanti, 4.5%. That brings its year-to-date improvement to 35%. Life Healthcare is still in the red for the year as a whole, still 5% lower for the year as a whole, but it climbed 3% higher today. Caxton had its annual general meeting where shareholders gave big thumbs up to all the directors. That was up 3% today. Year to date, 21.5%. Caxton, one of the value stocks on the JSE. And Richemont, which has also struggled in 2024, today had a good day, up 3%. And that takes its year-to-date gain to 4.5%. On the way down, Zeta, which has lost ground this year now after an 8% reverse today, down 3.5% year-to-date. Nampak has been shooting the lights out for the year. That's because it was really, really knocked down on concerns that the company was in deep trouble. Well, today, 3.5% lower, but year-to-date, it's more than doubled. Karoo down 3%. That bounces all over the place, but year-to-date, 67% better. Standard Bank down nearly 3% today, and it shows a soggy banking sector in South Africa in that the year-to-date, only 10% higher. New highs, Spar, another one, a fallen angel that has recovered, up 1.5% today, 146.50 to a new high. Tiger Brands at a new high at 252.34. We Buy Cars, one of the two very successful new listings, that was up 1.25% today to an all-time record. Well, it only listed this year, but 1 cent less than 46 Rand a share. And interestingly enough, there was news coming out of Boxer Retail, and Boxer's director, one of the directors, Dineo Malefi, spent R500,000 today, according to directors' dealings on the JSE, picking up shares in Boxer, and was quite happy to pay 66 Rand 28. Good stuff. If your directors are buying shares, nothing wrong with you going along with them. Sasfin, 2.5% higher to a 12-month high of 28.80. That's a company that's really been through the ringer. The other side, Afrocentric down to a new 12-month low of 1.94, down 0.5%. Gemfields, a new 12-month low of 1.77. That was down 7% today. And 91, the big asset manager, down 0.25%. And just to show its travails, it's now at a 12-month low of 36.32. Interesting to have a look at those in perspective, how they've been doing for the year as a whole. Well, top story today, I had a chat with Celia Brunk. He is the former mayor of Tshwane. He's now the leader of the caucus of the Democratic Alliance in Tshwane. Many thought that when the DA left the controlling position there in that coalition, when Action SA switched across to go with its supposed arch enemies in the EFF and the ANC to create a new government, many thought that Celia Brink would be off to Parliament and potentially a big job there in the Democratic Alliance. Not so. He's actually stayed in Tshwane and he's determined to help turn the city around. There have been some very significant developments in the past week, and we caught up with him today, particularly on a development yesterday where Action SA's new mayor said, no, they are going to fight the Labour case, which Celia Brink had brought at great political cost to try and save Tshwane from an even worse or even more powerless financial position. Let's listen in on the highlights of that interview. And by the way, it is our premiere for tonight, so you can get the full interview at 8 p.m. on BizNews TV on YouTube.
Alec, what essentially happened in Tshwane is that as the city collected less and less money and had to pay on expenditures that weren't budgeted, such as salary increases outside of the collective agreement, as well as the damage done by the administration that was imposed in the city, so the city started losing access to long-term funding for capital projects and so forth. It was a credit crunch. And that is what happens in most of these dysfunctional municipalities. You start using Eskom like a bank. So instead of paying Eskom on time, you don't pay Eskom. You use that money to pay salaries and other operational expenses. And that accumulates. And it's really, really difficult once you've fallen behind on Eskom, once you're in that position, to get out of it. And the irony is that for you to restore the finances of a city such as Tshwane, you have to pay Eskom, you have to settle it, because until you do, you don't have creditworthiness. So what happened in Tshwane was that Eskom instituted litigation. The matter was referred to mediation. And at that time, I said to Johan Mettler, we have to strike a deal with Eskom. We have to have a payment plan, because it's not just about keeping the sheriff of the court at bay. It's about the long-term financial sustainability of the city and our ability to deliver capital projects and so forth. And so what has happened is a deal has been struck. The arrears on the Eskom debt has to be paid in the next 5 years. So in exchange for that, Eskom has written off the interest on the arrears. There's about a $4.5 billion amount in arrears, less the interest of about 800 or 900 million. That leaves you with about 3.9 billion that has to be settled by payment plan. But the writing off of the debt is conditional that Tshwane meets the monthly installments. And so it's not just a great deal. It requires that Tshwane continues with improving its collections, with reducing the extent of the debtor's book. And that means more unpopular policies.
So, I don't know how often you talk to your colleagues on the other side of the Boerewors curtain, but it appears as though Johannesburg is also going through something similar with Eskom at the moment, reflecting that Eskom is taking a more concerted approach towards getting its money back. But are you seeing any similarities or any parallels there with what Tshwane's going through?
Absolutely. The trend is the same. Tshwane's debt to Eskom is a great deal bigger than Johannesburg. The difference, though, Alec, is that in Tshwane, we were honest about it. We didn't deny that we owed the money. We didn't try and come up with gimmicks. We said, listen, Eskom delivered load shedding. Eskom has been very bad to us. We're stuck in an energy monopoly. So, there are certain market forces that disadvantaged us. So we couldn't go to other suppliers of electricity when load shedding struck, but we owed the money. And what Johannesburg did and continues to do, it seems, is simply to deny that the money is owed. And that places you in a very weak position when you appear before a court of law. There's no sympathy from a judge or a mediator. If clearly you owe the money, but you dispute it because you simply don't want to pay. Johannesburg has got a serious issue with all of the entities there, where I don't think there's proper central control on expenditures. And so, you know, the water crisis has to be managed through Joburg Water. Electricity crisis has to be managed through, Joburg Power or whatever it's that entity is called. And on each of those boards, you've got cadres and employees who want, you know, to eat from the trough and benefit from the money slushing around there. So I think Joburg is in a very complicated situation. They are in denial. The entities don't make things easier. And I think that, the other disadvantage they have is they don't have a Johan Mettler. They don't have a very strong, ethical city manager who can make the difficult decisions, even when there's pressure from politicians not to do so. Because Tshwane's situation is so precarious, if they don't have somebody who is technically strong at the helm, there's really nobody to run the shop. And if you look at the skills base there, I mean, listen to the interviews by the deputy mayor, the MMC for finance and so forth. These folks really don't have a clue what's going on. So they need Mettler to keep things together until 2026.
You say 2026. How are you campaigning now for a change at that point? It's still more than a year away. So I guess there must be some kind of a long-term strategy.
Now, the interesting thing is the way that Action SA turned against our multi-party coalition, and I have to stress, it's not just the DA that they betrayed, it's also the Freedom Front plus the IFP and the other parties that were part of that coalition. That really enraged a very big part of the electorate in the city who felt betrayed, who felt that, you know, they voted for Herman Mashaba to keep the ANC out, not to, in fact, do the exact opposite. And I think that in itself has become a rallying point for many voters. We have made contact with people who've reached out to us to say, how can we help you? How can we help you to get back as mayor? And you know, if you've got an electorate that feels very strongly about something, that is a benefit that you have to use. And my commitment has been, I'll stick around in Tshwane. I will fight in the city council. We'll make sure that our legacy is protected and that the city is not destroyed. And that is a really strong basis to enter an election campaign. It will be a very strong theme of betrayal and of an opportunity to create some order out of the chaos of coalition politics and to punish some of these spoiler parties who essentially only bring the ANC back to power even after they've promised not to do so.
A touch of Jordan Peterson there, bringing order from chaos, or chaos from order. That's the way the world goes forward or goes backwards. And interesting to hear that Celia Brink is staying around in Tshwane. He was talking to me, by the way, from Tabazimbi. So it looks like the DA aren't letting him just do his work in Tshwane. He was out helping to campaign in Tabazimbi. Big story going on there. The town council, the metro municipality, hasn't been able to function because they've got no coalition that can take over to run the place, or certainly no permanent coalition. So they are going back to the voters. So they've dissolved the council, having another vote, a very big one there. And as Celia Brink was telling me in that interview, that you can see the full one at in the Premier tonight, depends on the voters of Tabazimbi, the residents. Are they going to vote in a functional council or not? Comrades Marathon is something else where we've seen a lot of chaos. This is a historic race. It's very close to many hearts in South Africa, including Rory Steyn. Now, Rory and I have got a new Monday show. So we've learned from Neil DeBeer and Chris Steyn, who have a Sunday show on politics. Rory and I talk about sport he talks about sport, I just prompt him, on a Monday. And then, of course, we have Business with Rob Hersoff on Thursday. So those are our in-depth programs for you to catch up on BizNews TV. If you haven't watched the discussion that Rory and I had, which premiered last night at 9 o'clock, then do go along. It's on BizNews TV on the YouTube channel. But here, he told us exactly what happened at the special general meeting of the Comrades Association, which was held after a lengthy process to get rid of those people who were committing massive malfeasance. They managed to eject a really good race director and so on. It's a long story, but here Rory summarizes for us what happened and how he ended up being on the board of directors of what is now the Comrades Association.
So the green numbers, a few of us started to chat, you know, amongst ourselves and said, listen, we've got to do something. And two or three of those guys approached me and said, Rory, if it comes to, you know, voting in a new board, would you be prepared to stand, to make yourself available? And I said, you know what, guys, actually, you know, where things are in my life at the moment, I actually do have a little bit of time, because normally it's a time thing. You know, you need to be able to dedicate yourself to that. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll throw my hat in the ring. And then we formed this this body, non-affiliated to anything. We called ourselves the Comrades Collective, because there was common purpose in that everybody there was really concerned that the oversight and the direction and strategy and, you know, right at the top of our event cannot be hijacked by people who are there to serve themselves. I mean, board members going to Comrades' house, helping themselves to free liquor from the bar, taking it home. When there's a function, they pitch up there, take food and take it home. What is that? How does a board member behave like that? You know, apart from the fact that, you know, all of the other stuff that was going on, community marshals that were paid a stipend to work on the day to keep the runners safe on desolate parts of the road. And there were questions asked about, you know, the number of pay packets that were issued to the number of marshals that were actually paid. Where did the money go? Why was it in cash? Why didn't we do e-walleting? And when Anne suggested that, you know, financial controls are put in place there, you know, she was attacked and vilified. So we can't have that kind of behavior going on at board level of the Comrades. So I put my hand up, and, you know, Saturday was a marathon, pun intended, because I logged onto the AGM before 10 o'clock, I think at about 9:30, and I logged off at about 10 to 6 that night.
Wow.
So I did about 8.5 hours, which would have earned me a Bill Rowan medal, as the running man was saying. There was a journalist called Stuart Mann, who's known as the running man, and he was doing almost ball-by-ball commentary for those who couldn't log in, because you could only log in if you were a member in standing. So for those who couldn't and were still interested, he was putting out this 8.5-hour-long ball-by-ball commentary on his website, and he was using the cut-off guns of the Comrades to indicate the length of the AGM, and it was crazy. It was long but necessary. We got certain important constitutional changes, amendments made. They carried. Some of them didn't carry. Not all of them. It wasn't unanimous. But we got a board elected, and all seven of the vacant, so there are two incumbents that remain on the board, and there are seven new board positions, and all seven of those came from that Comrades Collective. So just like we say that the electorate of South Africa were heard, you know, the electorate went to the polls, and the two major parties in our country heard the electorate. And so the government of national unity is holding strong for now, and I hope it continues to hold strong. So the membership of the Comrades Marathon Association have spoken, and they've said, we don't want that kind of malfeasance. We don't want corruption. We want competence. We want to professionalize the race. We want to take it into a new era, because in 2 years' time, 2027, we will host the 100th running of the Comrades. So the next one, the one that we're planning for now, Alec, 2025, is the test event for that, because, you know, the direction alternates every year. We only get one shot at practicing the 100th one, and it's this year in 2025, and we are way on the back foot. We've only just been elected. We're 2 days into being a new board. We meet for the first time tomorrow, and we've got to then get a briefing from the acting race organization manager, so he can brief us on where we are, so we can start giving direction to next year's Comrades.
Lovely pictures there. Thanks, Team BizNews, for making that look so special. Well, every Monday, then, you'll be able to catch Rory Stan and I talking about sport, or him talking about sport. And what qualifies him? Well, he's, as you can hear, he's a green number at the Comrades. That means you've got to have finished at least 10 Comrades. He's also the father of Kyle Steyn, who is the captain of the Glasgow Warriors, the winners of the URC. They beat the Mighty Bulls in the Bull Ring, you might recall, day of great despair in Tshwane, but not so in Glasgow. Anyway, Rory is very, very plugged in. And of course, but his company manages many of the big global, the security for many of the big global sporting events. So he's got an inside track like few others. David Bacher and I, David is from Corian Capital, talk a couple of days into the new month about what happened the previous month on markets. And November was all about the United States. It's taken investment prices in the United States now to the highest level on record, highest ever against the prices elsewhere. And this was a big part of our conversation today. Let's have a listen to the highlights of it. And again, the full interview is on, or will be on, BizNews TV in just a little while.
On the basis of our normalized earnings outlook, we still think that the premium that you're paying for the US market relative to other markets is substantial and warrants an underweight position to the United States. And certainly I have been beating that drum for the last few months and so far have been proven wrong. But these things can snap back quickly. So for our investors, we're certainly not following this steam train and actually moving in a different direction.
So let's just understand that David is not talking in isolation. The Financial Times of London today gave us some figures, and they show that that the United States is 27% of global GDP, but at the moment, 70% of investable assets are there. So if you think of that, it's nearly three times the valuation of the country's economic generation to the assets that you are paying for. As always, David and his team at Corian put together a wonderful presentation. I think if Donald Trump could see the picture that you gave us that's on screen right now, I know people who are listening to the podcast can't see this, but you've got a thin Donald Trump dressed up like James Bond, and David's team are calling him President 0047, pretty about the four in between. And his name, the name is Bond, Jammer Bonds. What the heck are you talking about here?
We obviously missed the mark. So it was actually a player on Afrikaans, Jammer Bonds. So the name is Bond, Jammer Bonds. Jammer Bonds. So obviously, President 0047's rhetoric around tariffs is what we're having a play at here. And, you know, tariffs are like special taxes that the government puts on goods coming from other countries. And when these goods arrive at a country's border, businesses have to pay an extra charge. And unfortunately, this cost doesn't just disappear and it gets passed on to consumers like you and me. So the Yammer Bonds, the sorry bonds, is really a play at potential inflationary concerns down the line. And as you know, the sticking with the James Bond theme, the villain of inflation is the bond market. So hence the title, the name is Bond, Yammer Bonds. President 0047 was our lead for this month's report.
Well, don't judge everybody on my limited understanding of the explanation there. I get this part, this headline, shaken, not stirred, all about, it was a Bitcoin November.
It was a Bitcoin November, and that goes, I think Bitcoin was up 35%. It's just truly remarkable. But I think the other big driver of the markets, probably the most important driver, was the strong US dollar. And America is shaking the world's economy. And the strength of the dollar after Trump's election can largely be explained by expectations of favorable economic policies and potentially high interest rates. And a strong US dollar is certainly good for some parts of the investing world, and certainly if you're a US investor, but it does create problems for other countries. So virtually across the board, if you convert equity returns into US dollars, there were some headwinds.
He's so combative, isn't he? He now has threatened South Africa and every other member of BRICS with 100% tariffs if we don't drop, or BRICS doesn't drop, the idea of an alternative currency to the US dollar. I mean, it's real bully tactics. Or maybe it's just a negotiating position. One never knows.
Yeah, I think you got it. I read somewhere you got to take Trump very seriously, but not literally. So you never quite know if it's a negotiating tactic. But yes, it's certainly not great for South Africa if he's going to continue with implementing those thoughts.
Indeed. Well, we make of it what we will, but I can tell you 2025 is going to be a really interesting year. Elon Musk is flying really, really high at the moment. Even though the Tesla share price today was down 1.5%, he's still worth $350 billion. There's a reason for that. Let's listen in to our partners at Bloomberg, where Peter Verko has been following the Musk story very closely and has this update.
Peter, why was it struck down again? Where does it leave Musk's pay? It's hardly paltry, is it?
No. So the judge who struck this pay deal down in January, Tesla then went back to its shareholders at its annual meeting in June and put it back to shareholders who voted in favour again, 72%, so quite overwhelmingly in favour that Trump should get this. Musk could get this pay package. Went back to the judge who delivered her ruling today for very similar reason that she struck it down in January. She said that the board really capitulated to Musk's terms. It didn't negotiate with him. It could have, there were other amounts that it could have offered him. Rather, it's just been, you know, taken to shareholders as it's, you know, this big package or it's nothing and nothing in between. So, Tesla have said that they will appeal that decision. At the time that it was granted back in 2018, it was worth about $2.6 billion to Musk. When it was struck down in January, it was worth $56 billion. Given the rally that we've seen in Tesla shares since the election in November, it's now worth about $110 billion to him. So it's a fairly significant chunk of money in anyone's terms, even in Musk's terms. You know, he's still far and away the world's richest person. His net worth is about $353 billion at the moment, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. But, you know, again, it comes down to whether they can get this pay package through to him. They are going to appeal. If that appeal, if they lose that, then Tesla is going to have to put together a new package.
Yeah, it's not too stingy, is it? $353 billion in terms of net worth. And part of the makeup of that, obviously, is what's happening with SpaceX. And the value of that company just keeps being on a tear. What's the latest in terms of what's happening with SpaceX?
Yeah, it's a little bit of, you know, what Musk loses on one hand, he picks up on the other. Bloomberg had a story this morning that SpaceX is going to conduct an insider share tender. So this is an opportunity for employees and early shareholders to sell stock back to the company. And that's going to be conducted at a valuation of about $350 billion US dollars. Now, only last month, we reported a valuation on SpaceX at around $255 billion. And at the beginning of this year, it was valued at around $210 billion in a separate insider tender. And now, Musk owns 42% of SpaceX, so you can do the math there. You know, his valuation or his value of his SpaceX stake has risen about $40 billion just in the last month. That makes SpaceX the most valuable private startup in US history. And just to put that in perspective, it is worth more than Airbus and Boeing combined.
Well, if there's one thing that I hope that our leaders in Pretoria or in the union buildings and in the mother city when they sit in parliament, the one thing that they can think of is, man, don't chase away people like Elon Musk. Do you know that SpaceX, that's only one of his businesses, is worth the same as the South African GDP? Let that sink in for a while. Tonight's premiere at 8 o'clock is Celia Brunk talking about what's going on in Tshwane. And what have I learned today? Well, that even though politicians might want to do it their way, there is a golden straitjacket, and that golden straitjacket is money. When you run out of money or when you just don't have the money to follow your crazy instincts, then you've got to play according to the rules. And that's exactly what's happened in Tshwane. They were trying to appease the workers by throwing out of court the very tough decisions that Sidiya Brink had to take in saying that increases that had been granted to the workers in the Tshwane municipality were unable, unaffordable for the municipality to pay. There was a three-month strike, the longest ever for any municipality, and there was lots of violence as well. But he stuck to his guns, only for Action SA to switch sides because they were talking about pay the workers the money. Well, they're not paying the workers the money anymore. They are going to court, and they are following exactly the same playbook that the former mayor, Sidiya Brink, had on the table. A golden straitjacket. It helps us, the rest of us, who watch these people and sometimes shake our heads. Look forward to being back in your company again, same time. Oh, sorry, Bronwyn's here tomorrow. Bronwyn Nielsen's here with you at 6 p.m. tomorrow. I'll be back on Thursday. Until then, from Alec Hogg, our team at BizNews, our technical producer, Ruan Erasmus, and executive producer, Lucy Ferreira, and the whole team at BizNews, thanks for being with us. Cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to a partner who makes it their business to understand yours.